Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
You're listening to We Love Movies. Very shortly, Rory and Brian will be reviewing Ben Wheatley's new film, Free Fire. But before we hear from the lads, let us hear from the cast. First up, here is Cillian Murphy, his co-star Michael Smiley and director Ben Wheatley. Here they are telling us about the story to Free Fire.
My character Chris and Michael Smiley's character Frank are kind of like the two IRA operatives who are sent... Well, we sort of assume they're IRA. It's never really stated. But they're sent to America to buy guns. And they meet this sort of go-between, which is played by Brie Larson. And then it sort of becomes like these two factions trying to do this deal in a very tense environment. And then inevitably, okay, something goes horrendously wrong. And... fisticuffs and gunfight ensues.
I'd been talking to Cillian Murphy, or he'd contacted me through his agent, and we went out for a drink together, which is always nice, you know, the actors are interested in what I'm up to. So I had a drink with him, and I thought, oh, yeah, all right.
I basically pursued Ben and just, you know, petitioned him to be in one of his films, and luckily... he very graciously wrote this role with me in mind. So he had this idea that me and Michael would be this kind of double act.
Cillian's character is very, you know, new money. You know, he's late 60s, early 70s, sexy young lad, you know what I mean? So he would have been the charm of the group, and I would have been the quiet guy standing in the back, just making sure the gun was okay and smiling, and just, you know, somebody was going to get it, and I was going to be the first to give it to them.
What did you order?
We ordered M16s. We ordered them. Now this is an AR-70. Different weapon. It's not what I ordered.
If you teach your boy some manners, learn a thing or two from the English. I'm not running a pizza delivery service. Do you want the weapons or you don't want the weapons?
Let's hear from the cast again. Cillian Murphy, this time out, we've also got Charlton Copley, Michael Smiley. Here they are telling us about what life was like on set.
Loose and easygoing, and that comes from the top. I mean, that comes from Ben and Amy and Andy Stark, his producer. You just didn't want to go home. You just wanted to hang around. It was a very familial, kind of healthy environment.
It's almost like doing a play. We didn't work with stand-ins, so even if it was, you know, your legs were going to be seen in the background of someone else's shot, you had to be available all the time, and so we would spend a lot of time off camera together. So it was an amazing sort of feeling of camaraderie and a lot of, you know, sort of banter off screen, a lot of competitive banter going on.
You know, it was a massive building, so you had the place where we were shooting. Then outside of that was these other empty rooms that we all chipped together and bought because we were filming beside an Argos. So we went and bought table tennis tables. So we had a competition going on and a dartboard, and there was a Spotify playlist. So everything was all self-contained, you know what I mean? So the whole thing, yeah, you'd be crawling around the dirt for a while, but you're going to go and play table tennis in a minute, you know? And you would come back and you'd be back in your character again. But you were... Everything I remember from working with Ben is this. You don't walk away unless you're sent away, because you want to be part of it.
Here we go. God damn. Oh, now we're cooking!
Now when We Love Movies, it is time to review Free Fire. With me is Brian Lloyd and Rory Cashin. We heard earlier on from Cillian Murphy, who gave us pretty much the plot to this. Brian, it's all set within a warehouse. You have what we're led to believe are IRA members buying guns from mobsters, but it all doesn't go according to plan. Now, Ben Wheatley, every film he's made, they've all been really, really different. How does he handle just an out-and-out action flick?
Pretty well, I think. I mean, he brought a lot of his sort of, I would say, subversiveness to it, if you know that kind of way. Like, you look at, like, High Rise, or you look at Sightseers, or you look at The Field in England. What he'll do is he'll take a very kind of standard setup and then completely turn it on its head. And he's doing that. Like, what I would say about Free Fire is that it's the straightest film he's ever done. Like, there's no subtext with this. There's no kind of social commentary in it. It is literally... These people are locked into a warehouse and they're trying to kill each other, and it's as straightforward as that. There's no kind of, you know, like I said, there's no social commentary, there's no satire, there's no anything to it. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is interesting, because Ben Wheatley doesn't usually do those kind of films. You know, that's what he doesn't usually make simple films, and this is a simple film, but I still enjoyed it. Like, I found it really, really funny. I found it really, really dark. And yeah, I liked it. I really did like it.
I do like Ben Wheatley an awful lot. He's got a great cast there, like really great cast. How did you feel that they all worked within the scenario?
There's next to no subtext in it. Everything is just like, that's one group, they want to buy guns, that's the other group, they want to sell guns, there's a misunderstanding, and then everyone starts shooting at each other. And that's kind of it for the entire runtime.
So it's more of a character-driven movie then?
You'd think so, but we're not really given much to do with the characters either. Like, we don't learn much more to them other than when we're introduced to them. Like, they're not going to, like, history or backstories or, like, intricate relationships between them all or anything like that. It's just them all bouncing off each other inside this one room. And that's fine.
But do any of the characters, do any of them, sorry to congratulate you, but do any of them go down a particular road initially, think, okay, that's the type of person they are, you've nearly made your mind up, and then they surprise you without giving anything away?
Not that I can think of, no. No. Like, everyone is, like, as you meet them, that's kind of who they are. They're all actually kind of, like, pigeonholed into cliched like type of characters. Like, Charlton Copley's an over the top kind of buffoon who thinks he's all that, but he ends up just being like the most clumsy person in the room. And yeah. Armie Hammer is just very smug, and Brie Larson is trying to keep the peace, but she's also like kind of a tough ass chick. And yeah, there's nothing beneath the surface of it. And while the surface is fine, it reminded me of, I know everyone's gone off their minds, gone, oh yeah, it's very Scorsese, it's very Tarantino. It reminded me of a Martin McDonagh film.
Oh,
that's interesting. Just look at the cast in a little bit more depth, if we can, gents. From an Irish perspective, Brian, Jack Rayner, Cillian Murphy. I'd imagine Cillian is solid. What's Jack like?
Not bad, actually, to be honest. I mean, I know a lot of people do kind of think that he, you know, any of the roles that he's particularly known for, and I'm talking about what Richard did, it's not really a stretch to imagine him, you know, that sort of way. Because, like, you know, what Richard did, he was playing the sort of D4 rugger bugger type. You know, that's not hard to imagine Jack Rayner in that role. And in Sing Street as well, he was playing this kind of, again, South Dublin guy, blah, 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 blah. In this, you can see that he is really trying his best to kind of imbue the character with something, you know, that kind of way. Like, he really is in it. And I think it's the kind of role that, you know, I wouldn't say it was necessarily made for him, but he definitely made it his own. And yeah, he was good in it. Yeah, he, I've seen him in worse. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. Transformers Age of Extinction was just muck, and he was muck in it.
Do you know, just on Jack Ray, just to defend him, I suppose, on Transformers, but I think that is one of those movies that you go, that's a business decision role. Like, you know, I don't think anyone looks at that, the script, and goes, this is fine art. This is a big blockbuster that's going to make a hell of a lot of money.
You notice he's not in Five.
He's not. They've got sense. They took the money and ran. But sorry, Bron, I jumped in there. But
very true. Yeah.
But Cillian Murphy, though, my thoughts on him in Free Fire?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I mean, again, like, he is basically playing the straight man. You know, that sort of way. Like, he is playing this character that is just has no kind of time for jokes or whatever. He's just there to do a job. And the way him and Michael Smiley kind of bounce off each other is very fun as well. And Michael Smiley, I think he is one of the most underrated actors out there. Like, for my money, I think he's, like, you know, this side of the world's Richard Jenkins, you know, that sort of way. Like, a really, really good, talented character actor that just doesn't get the recognition he deserves. Armie Hammer was really funny in it as well. I thought he was really good. And it's surprising, because I don't think most people would kind of consider Armie Hammer a comedic actor. But he really does have the chops for it. Like,
when I saw him in The Social Network, like a lot of people, I thought, this guy has huge potential. And then I saw him in, like, what we all did, The Lone Ranger, and then The Man from U.N.C.L.E. I thought, oh no, your time has come and gone.
I thought he was good in U.N.C.L.E.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I thought he was miscast. And The Lone Ranger, that should have been Big Trouble in Little China for me, and it just was awful. That's, unfortunately, time is catching up with us, so we need to get an L wrap here on Ben Wheatley's new film Free Fire. So all in all, it's not changing the genre in any way. It's a pretty simplistic story, but what it does it do it well with the cast? Did you come out enjoying it, or is it one of those movies that could be easily forgotten, Rory?
Well, that's like, I seen it a good long time ago now. I seen it, I think, January.
We saw it in December.
December, right. So we seen it a good while ago, and to be honest, I was petrified coming in here that you'd ask me what the plot was or any like detailed question, because I've already forgotten most of it. And I've no want to go see it again.
Okay.
So for me it was, that was fun, but it will not be, you know, remembered as one of Wheatley's highlights, I don't think.
Yeah.
I would give it 6.5 out of 10.
Okay, and for you, Brian?
No, I enjoyed it. I mean, I really did like it. I liked the fact that Ben Wheatley was trying to do something different. Fair enough, it's nothing we haven't seen before, but it's him kind of coming to the table with it and trying to do something that, you know, isn't kind of buried up its own whatever. But yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, I do think it is one of those films that, yeah, it's definitely not Ben Wheatley's best film at all, but I still really, really enjoyed it. I still thought it was really, really funny. I still thought there was a lot to like about it, so I'm going to give it 8 out of 10.
Free Fire is in cinemas this weekend. Also out is Ghost in the Shell, starring Scarlett Johansson, the film adaptation of the anime classic. We'll be getting the lads' thoughts on that. Plus, The Smurfs, Is it The Lost City or The Lost Village?
The Lost Village.
The last 90 minutes.
saucer of milk there for the non-Smurf fan. Thank you so much, gents. We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden. Now on We Love Movies, it is time for the movie news. And one big story which caught our attention this week is the remake to Escape from New York. Well, remake is probably one thing, but by all accounts, it'll be more so a prequel. Before we talk to Andy McCarroll about the plans for it, here's a little bit from the trailer to Escape from New York.
One man must go in where no man has ever gotten out. And if he comes back alone, his nightmare has just begun.
Snake Plissken, played of course by Kurt Russell. It's really become his signature role now, but it really just transformed his career. Escape from New York is one of my favourite movies, directed by John Carpenter. Andy McCarroll, we're going to go through all the movie news now. Andy, they have finally, it seems, 20th Century Fox hired a director for the gig. So for anyone that hasn't heard, who is the man at the helm?
The man at the helm at the moment is going to be Robert Rodriguez, who directed, amongst other things, Desperado. He'd done the Death Proof movie, the Grindhouse thing of Quentin Tarantino, From Dusk Till Dawn. And curiously enough, he's also done the Spy Kids trilogy, which kind of is the one that stands out there as a kind of anomaly. He's kind of got a form when it comes to the genre film. So I think, I know, kind of going against what I think you are going to be saying now, but I think he'd actually be a good choice if you're going down that route.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Andy. Like, the thing about it is, his earlier work, in fairness to him, there was some interest. Like, he can be a bit hit and miss for me. Like, there's no doubt that he is a talent. But the last few years, he really has churned out some horrendous films altogether. Like, his sequel to Sin City just came and went. Like, people just had no time for it whatsoever. They just almost left it too long. But he's been more missed than hit. But the thing that a lot of people mightn't realise is, though, that he has just finished directing Battle Alita for James Cameron. The 20th Century Fox obviously must have liked what they saw with that movie and think, you know what, maybe this is the second coming of Robert Rodriguez, so maybe give him a chance. But I just thought there were other directors there that could do it. But look, Rodriguez loves Escape from New York. He might do the character justice.
Before I tell you who's being tapped apparently to play, who do you think would be a good Snake Plissken?
Oh no, don't tell me the guy. Do you know what, then? I can imagine now, being Rodriguez, he'll probably want some Mexican actor to play it. And that, look, that's not a bad thing by any means, but I just, the last thing I want to see now is Antonio Banderas playing a Snake Plissken. I would like to see, this might sound a bit mad, either Wyatt Russell, Kurt Russell's son, him potentially, because he can act. He was in 22 yeah. Jump Street, for people that might remember, and he was in that recent Richard Linklater film. And who else would be good? Dan Stevens.
That wouldn't be a bad choice.
He was recently in Beauty and the Beast, played the Beast, and of course the Guest. At the moment, I've been put on the spot. They're the two that jump to mind. Who have you heard?
The name that's being bandied about at the moment is James Franco is apparently in talks to take over. Oh. They want to put the emphasis on the comedy side as well as the action, and he's the guy apparently they're very happy with. It's the same studio that rebooted the Planet of the Apes, and apparently they were very impressed with his work on the first film of that. So he's been tapped to kind of get his own franchise off the back of that.
No. Andy, that makes me really sad. No, not James Franco.
James Franco, it's an off-the-wall choice, but I think if you just made, you know, I know there was rumours for years it was going to be Gerard Butler, if you just make a kind of straight remake of that, they're not going to stand up to Kurt Russell. You're not going to get somebody, you know, manlier and cooler than him. So maybe going a kind of different direction is the way to make it a bit more interesting.
But anyway, we must move on, Andy, because another big trailer dropped this week. Spider-Man Homecoming. Marvel have finally got the character back. Granted, Sony are going to be releasing it. Before we get your thoughts on it, here's a little bit from that trailer.
So to become an Avenger, are there like trials or an interview?
Do me a favor.
Can't you just be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man? Just stay close to the ground. You're the Spider-Man.
Andy, I gotta be honest with you. I didn't think much of this trailer. I didn't think much of it. It's like the effects in it are still stuck in the 90s.
It does. It looks like it's not polished yet. There's a couple of scenes, in particular Iron Man getting out of the suit on the rooftop. You know they're going to be fixed, and by the time the film comes out, it's going to look fantastic. What bothered me is that they've done the same thing that they've done with all the other Spider-Man and most of the Marvel films. They've shown the whole film in chronological order in the trailer. And you absolutely don't need to do that. If it's something like Aquaman or like Guardians of the Galaxy, where people don't know the property very well, fair enough, try and throw as much as you can on the screen. But like that trailer could literally be me sitting in a chair, turning to the camera and saying, Spider-Man, 7th of July. And it's still going to make $1 billion. Like,
yes.
There's no reason to give away so much in the trailer. And it kind of ruins the element of surprise for it as well.
Yeah, it is disappointing. And you know what? There's something about Tom Holland. I can't warm to him at all.
Really?
Maybe it was his recent BAFTA win. I thought, you little upstart. You little insolent pup. But I do like the fact that Tony Stark is making what seems more than just a cameo. It's almost like the Mr. Miyagi of Spider-Man's world.
I don't think he's going to actually be in it that much. I think based on the trailer, he'll show up at the start for the Staten Island ferry thing. And I think Spider-Man's going to be on his own. So, you know, eventually at the end, he's going to be asked to join the Avengers. I think the scenes they've shown in the trailer, I think that's pretty much the majority of his scenes. I'll be very surprised if he's in it for longer than 10 minutes of screen time.
All right, so 7th of July is when we will see Spider-Man Homecoming. And finally, Andy, Disney, they're on a great run at the moment when it comes to remaking their classic animated films and turning them into live-action ventures. The next one that we'll be seeing soon enough is Dumbo. Tim Burton is directing this, but there's some Irish interest here.
There is. Colin Farrell's been cast as he's going to play the withered father of two kids who befriends Dumbo and tries to, you know, save him from the evil circus, which is apparently going to be run by Danny DeVito, which is just a perfect piece of casting, if you can remember the original cartoon.
Absolutely. And you remember Danny DeVito in Big Fish?
Yes, actually, yeah. That's a very underrated film as well. It's kind of Tim Burton gets beaten about the head for his kind of, you know, Helena Bonham Carter, Johnny Depp stuff. But I think Big Fish is kind of one of his little hidden gems that deserves a second watch, definitely.
Because when I first heard, Tim Burton going back and, you know, doing another kind of classic Disney-type tale, I went, oh, no, what are you doing? But I think he can bring the right level of darkness to Dumbo, because you got to remember, that was a very dark film. One of those films that definitely up there with Pinocchio when it comes to the darkness. But that'll be out, is it next year, Andy, or in a couple of years' time?
Out next year, next May.
Okay, can't wait to see that. Andy, you'll be back after the break, because we're going to be talking about Justice League. The new trailer for it also landed this week, and a lot of people have a lot to say about it. It's been pretty mixed, the thoughts on Justice League. We'll be telling you very shortly what we think here on We Love Movies.